Coming up on this episode...
People who do believe Peter, though, are what I'm calling a DIY spy-busting trio.
I just decided to take those events and put them on the MARTA downtown and put them in the shopping malls.
Not ending up in real-world spy danger, like ending up dead in the Chattahoochee River.
This podcast from Georgia Public Broadcasting highlights books with Georgia connections. Hosted by your two favorite public radio book nerds who also happen to be your hosts of All Things Considered on GPB Radio. I'm Peter Biello.
And I'm Orlando Montoya. Thanks for joining us as we introduce you to authors, their writings, and the insights behind their stories, mixed with our own ideas and thoughts about just what gives these works the narrative edge. All right, Peter, let's pretend you're going to write a spy novel.
Okay.
In what decade are you going to set your spy novel?
Man, I don't know if I have a particular decade, but I do think it would be any time before computers and cell phones were ubiquitous. I just feel like if you're writing a spy novel at that time, you have to rely more on wit and deception and, you know, clever disguises and not just on technical prowess with the machine to break in something.
So 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, that kind of thing.
That could work, but it could also be, you know, 1800s for that matter. Spies existed then, I assume.
A Roman spy novel.
Sure, why not?
How about what city are you going to set your spy novel in?
It would have to be a place where there are secrets worth knowing, I think. Maybe D.C.?
Okay, so...
You know, political intrigue, what's going on here? You know?
D.C. spy novel set before the age of computers.
Well, yes.
The book we're talking about today
is not that.
Not that.
I can't imagine I would have guessed that.
I mean, you had a 1 in 10 chance of getting the decade, I guess. This is set in 1985 in Atlanta, Georgia. And this book has everything that I like about spy novels. It's thrilling. It's got... unraveling clues. It's got secrecy. It's got people who aren't who they really say they are. It's got tangling loyalties. And it all takes me back to the era of Michael Jackson and Tears for Fears. The book is called Everybody Wants to Rule the World by Ace Atkins.
So I can see why the 80s would be a good time for this, right? It's Cold War time. But why Atlanta?
Well, I mean, think about it. We had defense contractors here, right?
Dobbins. Okay.
We had, you know, Martin Marietta. We had all these industries creating spy satellites and whatnot. But, you know, the Russians were everywhere, Peter. They didn't just settle in Washington, D.C. There were spies everywhere. And more importantly, this is where Ace Atkins grew up. And he was a child of the 80s, and kind of the story is based on his childhood, and it's like a love letter to the 1980s. We got all kinds of 1980s references, all kinds of references to Atlanta, and the protagonist is a 14-year-old boy who is named Peter, and he's really the person who drives the story. I spoke with Atkins about Peter. And he said that Peter was really the first character that he really didn't have to craft very much because...
Peter's me. And I was that age. I was 14, 15 years old in 1985. And you always hear the old adage is write what you know. And I think for many of my books, I would write what I would learn. I would write about subjects I was interested in or places I wanted to visit and learn more about. And this was the first book that I did set in a place and time that I was intimately aware of. I lived in East Cobb County, way out in the suburbs. I had interest in watching MTV and riding BMX bikes. And so it was really the first character that I could step into the shoes I knew so well. And I also like the idea that a 14-year-old kid is running the story because, you know, he can't drive a car. He can't do the things like a regular investigator. He's having to bum rides for friends. He's having to rely on adults for information. And that puts him in a very unique spot.
Huh. Okay. So 14-year-old Peter, is he able to sort of figure out who the bad guys are before the authorities do? Or
Peter is able to figure out a lot. Remember, okay. This is the 1980s. This is the era of independent, free-roaming kids. So let's hear it for the Gen Xers out there, myself among them. You know, when I was that age, you could, you know, your parents didn't know where you were. You could go out in the back, go down to the creek, get into an alligator-infested waters. You could get stung by bees in the woods, and nobody knew. As long as you were home by the time the lights went on, you weren't going to get yourself in trouble by your parents, even though you would have been in trouble, you know, with what you did. Anyways, so in this book's case, in the opening sequence, Peter thinks his mother's new boyfriend, Gary, is a Russian spy, and Peter gets himself into some pretty hairy situations trying to prove that Gary is a Russian spy and save himself. You know, Peter is motivated by saving his mother, saving himself from this Russian spy and not ending up in real-world spy danger, like ending up dead in the Chattahoochee River.
So this book, it involves someone dead on the banks of the Chattahoochee River.
On the banks of the Chattahoochee River. Of course, you're going to start a Atlanta spy novel that way. And that's among other hijinks that are portrayed around landmarks around the city. I mean, there's the downtown Hyatt, which appears in a prominent scene, you know, that landmark stunning building with the grand atrium. There's the Lenox Mall. And you know, that's a part of the scene setting.
Okay. So, seems like there might be some kind of family drama here. We'll see, but why does he think his mother's boyfriend is a spy?
Well, there are a few clues. First of all, Gary has kind of a vaguely European accent, which he explains away as being German. And Peter also finds like a weird radio in his office that he thinks is a spy radio. But he also finds cassettes in Gary's car that are like Russian military music. So Peter thinks that Gary is a spy.
So you mentioned that Peter gets himself into these hairy situations. What are we talking about?
Well, there are many hairy situations. You know, it's a thriller, so you've got one coming just about every chapter. But the ones that are early on in the book, and remember, we like to talk about things that occur early on in the book so we don't give spoilers. But the ones that occur early on in the book is that Peter breaks into a defense contractor's compound where his mother works to try to, you know, figure out some of the clues. And
So that's why the boyfriend would be interested in her, because she works at a defense contractor.
Yes.
Okay.
So, you know, there are all these clues that are out there. And another hairy situation that Peter gets in is that he is almost seduced by a 14-year-old Russian girl spy. You know how in the spy novels... Yes.
Yeah.
You know how in the spy novels the guy is always seduced by a blonde bombshell? Well, this is the first time that I'm thinking of where I've read or seen like a teenage female Russian spy seductress. And I should say it's pretty obvious that she's a spy.
Does she have some kind of ridiculous spy name?
Anna.
Oh, okay. All right. It's not a James Bond-esque kind of thing. Got it.
but he's almost seduced at a teenage nightclub called Trax.
You know, I might be too young for such a thing as a teenage nightclub.
They existed, Peter. They were out there in the world. It was like a normal nightclub, but for teens.
Okay. Well, you're a decade older than me, so you might have had experience.
Yes.
Can we take a detour? Have you been to one of these?
Yes. Back in the 80s and 90s. Well, I guess I would have been a teen in the 90s.
Would you all drink like Shirley Temples?
There was just like a regular nightclub, but just like no alcohol. You know,
okay.
What could possibly go wrong? Of course, there's not going to be any fooling around. Of course, there's not going to be any smoking. You know, all the bad behavior goes on there. But anyways, it all goes back to this idea of 80s independence and latchkey kids.
I was not a latchkey kid. My mother was very involved in everything that I was doing. But I was somewhat envious of the latchkey kids that I knew in the 80s that had the complete freedom of doing whatever they want to, with their parents working late or divorced parents that were trying to live their own lives and leaving the kids at home. And it was something that was very difficult to explain to my editor, who is considerably younger than I am, about how a kid could have so much freedom during that time. It just was something that I just said, you had to be there. I said, it was that era of the latchkey kid where you had to fend for your own. You had to grow up very quickly. You had to feed yourself. You had to get up in the morning. And, I think to the age of helicopter parenting, it's a very novel time.
And so that's how Peter gets to go out in the world and make all these discoveries and do his, you know, investigation. The author, Ace Atkins, had a line in the book, something to the effect of, and I'm going to get it wrong, but it was something to the effect of, you know, our parents didn't care about us, you know, they just sort of left us to roam free.
Can we go back to one thing? Because the idea of a 14-year-old kid breaking into a defense contractor, I mean, what did he have to do? Did he like steal his mother's ID or something like that?
Yeah, well, he got his mother's badge.
Okay,
and then the friends drove him, and they jumped over a fence and they went through the woods and badged in, and then he's got to find his way to his mother's office, which he doesn't know where he is. Gets past security, you know.
He gets past security.
Yes, I think he was even like in an elevator. But it's a spy novel. You got to suspend your disbelief.
Okay,
suspend your belief a little bit. But you know, most of his friends don't really think that Peter is right in the head. they think he's crazy about this Russian spy business. They either don't care or they don't think it's true. Most of them are just along for the ride, you know, the adventure of breaking in, whatever. So two people who do believe Peter, though, are what I'm calling a DIY spy busting trio. That's going to be Peter, Hotch, and Jackie. And you just know from the very beginning of this book that Hotch and Jackie are going to be good, honest people.
How do you know that?
Well, they're outsiders, so they're not from spy world. They're fearless. They're loyal. Hotch is a curmudgeonly old, washed-up writer who used to write spy novels. He now works at a bookstore, and he distrusts authority. He's very protective of Peter, and it's based on a real-life Atlanta writer. And Jackie is a former college football player, black, big guy, linebacker dude, and he was kicked out of the football program for being gay. And so he's a drag queen now. He's very observant. He's, of course, sassy. He's fearless. He doesn't care. And most importantly, he can kick your ass. And that's going to be important.
Yeah, important if you're trying to be a spy. Yeah, you might need some defense.
When the Russians come, you're going to need a big linebacker, even if he's wearing heels.
Okay, so you've mentioned Russians a few times. Who are the Russian characters in this book, aside from maybe that boyfriend?
So I'm not going to tell you who exactly the Russian characters are, because that would be a spoiler. I will say that at least one of the characters is very relatable, and you sort of, I guess, develop empathy for him. I mean, because let's face it, some of the characters are evil. They're like killing people. But there is one that is based on an actual real-life person. His name is Vitaly Yurchenko. And the author fictionalized Vitaly somewhat. But the real-life Vitaly Yurchenko is a fascinating story. 1985, KGB agent. He defected to the United States. He provided the CIA with some secrets, and he apparently had some great adventures in the U.S. Before he defected back to the USSR. And I just find that to be a fascinating story. So the author takes this Vitaly Yurchenko character and puts him into an American scene and kind of imagines what he would be doing here. The key thing, though, is Vitaly can't stand American consumerism. So imagine his perspective, right? He grew up in Soviet World War II, deprivation, can't hardly find food, can't hardly find a place to live. And now he's, you know, helicoptered into America with, you know, fast food joints and shopping malls.
The character of Vitaly Yurchenko, who is actually a real person, who is a historic character, who did actually defect to America in the fall of 1985, I think I think he thought it was just obscene. And I think that's one of the reasons he ended up going back to Russia. In reality, I have another reason for it in the book. I fictionalize it. But Yurchenko was on the cover of Time magazine, Newsweek magazine. He came in, he stayed in America for 3 or 4 months. And then he was back in the U.S., he was staying in the U.S., and he was in Georgetown, went to a very Tony French restaurant. And he was with a CIA handler, and he went to the bathroom, and they didn't notice. He walked out the back door, walked back to the Soviet embassy, and I guess what you'd call it, redefected. And I think part of it was the American excess. I think he had a hard time wrapping his head around it.
So in many spy novels, right, when someone goes against their country, it could be because of greed. It could be because of love or true conviction. Was any of that true for Vitaly?
Well, in the book, Vitaly is motivated by love. In real life, I can't say. I'm not an expert on that. But in the book, Vitaly very much wants to see a Russian woman again. You know, that's part of Atkin's fiction. But whatever the case is, real life or in the book, things in the spy world get tense.
I bet, yeah.
There's near collisions. There's near deaths. There's near captures. Everyone seems to be just on the verge of being found out for who they really are, except, of course, for Peter, Hotch, and Jackie, who I said earlier, they're true to themselves.
One of the other reasons why it's exciting to write about 1985 is the, you know, without cell phones, without tracking units on cars, without Google searches, you know, this would have been, you know, if you had those things, it'd be a much shorter book. But the near capture and evasion, I think, is the core of the tension of the spy novel. As you get close to the danger or get into danger, and then you escape from danger. And of course, instead of doing this in the cafes of Vienna or off the Eiffel Tower or in the deep in the Soviet Union, I just decided to take those events and put them on the MARTA, put them in downtown and put them in the shopping malls. So
MARTA, there's a scene on MARTA.
There's literally a scene when they're on MARTA. It's a pretty important scene. It's a pretty tense scene as well. And I love the scene setting in this book, not only the place, but the time as well. Long live the 1980s. Not only the cultural references to the music and the movies, but also the politics. Remember, this is the era of glasnost and perestroika. This was when Russia was getting McDonald's, and we all thought because of that it was going to become a democracy. I, as a matter of fact, in 1989 started learning Russian. I took 4 years of Russian in high school and college. That was my first major in college before switching to broadcasting. So, you know, who knows? I could have ended up, if not a spy, then maybe an interpreter or a Russian teacher.
You ever wonder what you would have been as a spy?
Not as a spy. I seriously thought I'd be some sort of maybe State Department interpreter or work for the UN or something.
But would that have interested you, being a spy? Does that suit your personality?
That's too much danger for me, buddy. Too much danger.
Well, how do you say good book in Russian? And was it a good book?
Хорошая книга. It's a хорошая книга. Or you could also say good book is Everybody Wants to Rule the World by Ace Atkins. It is a very good book. And so the narrative edge for me is the thriller. It's a mystery. It's got a lot of action. And you have these adorable characters, especially Peter, Hotch, and Jackie. Hotch and Jackie especially are very funny because they're just ordinary folks, right? And they're caught up in this big web of deceit and danger. And of course, you know, like every spy novel, it's got good guys and bad guys, and you can't exactly figure out which is which until the end. You know, I happened to be watching the film North by Northwest when I was reading this book. I happened to watch that movie. And if you might not know, that's a 1959 Cary Grant movie, a spy movie. And it kind of reminded me, again, of why we like spy stories. The scene setting in this book reminded me of my childhood as well. Even though I didn't grow up in Atlanta, I grew up in Orlando, Florida, kind of in the same suburban milieu. But yeah, it's a story for Gen Xers. It's a story for everyone. Pick it up.
Well, that's cool. The book is Everyone Wants to Rule the World by Ace Atkins. Thanks so much for telling me about it.
My pleasure.